Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to a special edition of Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. It's not Saturday, it's Wednesday, but this is a really important topic. This month is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. It's like the third leading cause of death, I think, in America. And as we know, recently, Chadwick Boseman, he's a very famous African-American actor, died of colon cancer, and he was younger. He was under 50. So it can happen younger, and we'll talk about that tonight. Tonight I have, and again, she's been here before, Commander and Dr. Danaba A. Joseph. She is a board certified in internal medicine and is a commander in the Commissioned Corps of the U.S. Public Health Service. She joined the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as an Epidemic Intelligence Service Officer in the Division of Cancer Prevention and Control. And she is the medical officer and medical director of the CDC's Colorectal Cancer Control Program. Okay, you guys say that five times. I think this might be our other guest here. Let's see here. Good evening. Is this Angela?
Hey, this is Angela.
It is.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm great. How
Angela.
Are you all?
Let me tell them who you are. This is Angela Carraway.
Okay.
She is a colorectal cancer survivor. I got connected with her through the Colorectal Cancer Alliance. Good evening, Angela.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy both of you are here tonight. I specifically wanted people of color. I try to get people of color on most of the shows just to show that there are one practitioners, you know, like Dr. Joseph, and then also survivors, because sometimes people only see African American people who have died of colon cancer, so or other diseases that I've discussed on the show. So I think that's important. Let's just start with the doctor first. So what is a colorectal cancer? Just a short answer. What is colorectal cancer?
Right. So cancer is any sort of out of control growth of cells. Like there's no off switch that tells them to stop duplicating and taking over everything. So colorectal cancer is just out of control cells in your colon or rectum.
Now, what are the signs? Are there signs for colon cancer? Because some cancers, they're not really until the last minute and it's too late.
Yeah, so a lot of times you do not have much by way of symptoms to start until the cancer can get pretty advanced before you can start having symptoms. But sometimes people will have a change in bowel habits, so it's harder to go, or if they do go, their stool is a lot skinnier than it used to be. You can get blood in your stool. You can get diarrhea. You can be constipated. You can feel bloated. You can have abdominal pain. You can lose weight and not understand why you're losing weight. So if you have any of those sorts of things, and sometimes, yes, they can be a little vague and not specific, but if you have any of those things, you should definitely go see your doctor.
Now, Angela, what kind of symptoms did you
have?
Or did you know that it was colon cancer? How did you know?
So at first I saw a little blood, but I thought maybe it was a ruptured hemorrhoid, because I went to Google Medical University. I always say that because that's me joking about it. So I went on Google and I, you know, kind of did whatever the symptoms were I had at that time, but it basically boiled down to that it was, for me, it was a ruptured hemorrhoid. And then about eight, nine months later, I finally got a new primary care physician. At this point, I was having blood in my stool every time I pooped. And
okay.
It was red, dark red, all those things happening. And because I just got with a new primary care physician, told her the symptoms, and then she recommended a gastroenterologist. Well, this particular guy, I couldn't get in to see him until December. So that was in October. Saw him December, had a consultation with him December 23rd, and shared with him at this point that there were six different cancers in my family just on my mother's side. And
wow.
I shared with him that I because we were going down the path of not having a colonoscopy, but I knew that that was the wrong thing. I didn't quite know what colonoscopy was. I just knew somebody needed to go back there and look and see. I didn't know who.
All right. Well, Angela,
I didn't know
you
how
hold
they
that thought. Angela, hold
yeah.
that thought.
Okay.
I want to bring the
okay.
doctor back in here. So now you're having these symptoms. Dr. Joseph, what are some tests that are done to verify on the part of the doctor?
All right. So sometimes if you just show up in the doctor's office and you say you're having blood in your stool, they'll want to confirm you actually have blood in your stool. So they may do a stool test, like right there in the office. Like they could just do a rectal exam, put it on a little card, test it, see if there's blood in your stool. So that's one test. That is not a screen for colorectal cancer when you do it that way, by the way. You can use stool tests for a screen for colorectal cancer, but that's not it. But if you're having symptoms like that, the most common thing is to get a colonoscopy. Basically just look inside your colon and see what might be causing the problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what age, I understand that it's what age should you get it? And then if you have somebody like Angela who has a family history of different cancers, tell us the different ages people should go.
Right. So, I mean, I do want to make a distinction between being screened for colorectal cancer and having symptoms. Screening is when you don't have any symptoms. You're feeling fine. You're going about your daily life. Life is wonderful. You know, you're not having any of that stuff that Angela was talking about. That if that's you, then right now, like the American Cancer Society recommends starting at age 45, and the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has recently suggested that they will be lowering their age to start to 45 as well. So we'll just say 45 for the moment, as when you should go. If you have a family history, so let's say, you know, Angela's dad told her that he had polyps, adenomatous polyps, or colorectal cancer diagnosed at age 50, then you should start at 10 years before that point. So she should have started at age 40. So it just depends on how old your relative is when they were diagnosed, or if you have, like, many relatives with colorectal cancer and sometimes some other cancers that are associated with syndromes that have a higher risk of colorectal cancer.
Mm-hmm. So now, Angela, what was your experience preparing for this colonoscopy? What did you have to do? What steps can you tell us about?
Yeah, I had to drink the nasty solution that they prepped with. And, there's that. So that part was, that was the worst part, because then that just, you know, cleans you out. So you were in the
and
bathroom.
How long did you have to do
like,
that?
Isn't
how long? How long did you have to do that?
Yeah, I had to do that for 24 hours.
Okay. And then
couldn't
eat anything? What about Jell-O? Could you eat Jell-O?
I could not, unless the Jell-O was, like, clear. I couldn't do any Jell-O because they didn't want any dye, like the red.
Yes.
I didn't drink clear drink, like chicken broth, all the broths. But when I was preparing for my – okay, I'm sorry, I'm jumping ahead. So, yes, just for my colonoscopy, I had to just drink the solution that they give you. And you go to the bathroom. I mean, you feel lighter. I mean, that was the plus for me. I felt really light. Yeah. But
I agree.
I was hungry.
I felt very light. I had to prepare for mine, and I was telling the doctor right before we started, I had to go back a second time because the first time they tried to investigate, they couldn't, everything wasn't cleared out. And then the second time I went, everything was cleared out, but I have this thing called the loopy colon. So it's like, it just twists and turns. And so they went as far as they could go, I guess. And they were very, you know, they were satisfied, but they said, you know, if your doctor has any concerns, they suggested, an ultrasound, as another, like a backup, you know. Now, Dr. Joseph, has the preparation for colonoscopy changed over the years? Or has it always been just this clear liquid and this crazy solution that cleans you out? What is the process?
I mean, yeah, people have tried all sorts of different formulas. They've tried giving you less fluid. They've tried pills. They've tried all sorts of things. But basically, they all do the same thing. They make you poop. if you can't look inside someone's colon if you're full of poop, because when you look in there, all you'll see is poop, which completely defeats the point.
Right.
So the point is to look in there and try to see the walls of your colon and make sure there are no polyps or, you know, anything that doesn't belong in there.
Right.
Now, how long does the colonoscopy normally take, Dr. Joseph?
Well, the colonoscopy itself doesn't usually take that long, maybe 10, 20 minutes max. You know, it's all the getting ready to get there in the first place that takes forever. You know, if you're talking door-to-door, like time you show up, time you leave, you probably need to give yourself a good hour, hour and a half. You have to check in. They have to, you know, do all their checks, give you your medication, put IV in, all that fun stuff. But the actual procedure itself only probably takes 10 to 20 minutes.
And are you completely knocked out? I just want to explain to the audience, or are you in the twilight phase? What's the anesthesia issue, and how is that administered, and the strength of it, I guess I should say?
All right. So most commonly now these days, people probably get propofol, you know, which unfortunately will forever be known as the Michael Jackson drug. But
yes,
it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does actually.
That's
like
a good
knock
drug.
You out. But it's very short acting, so it knocks you out. You'll feel like you blinked, and then you'll open your eyes, and they'll be like, oh, we're done. So that's the most common thing. You can do it with what they call moderate sedation, where you're more loopy but not totally out of it. But it's more common to get propofol.
Now, Angela, you had the colonoscopy, and then what happened after that for you?
I was told that I had colorectal cancer, and then the next day I had blood work, CT scan done, and then the following week I was meeting with a surgeon that the gastroenterologist recommended, and I was meeting with her, and then basically 2 weeks after my colonoscopy, I was having my colorectal cancer surgery. I don't know the correct terminology or the word for the fact that they removed 12 inches of my colon. And so all that
12
happened.
Inches.
So I found out, on December 29th, 2015, and then on January 4th, I was meeting with my surgeon, and on January 12th, I was at the hospital having surgery.
Now, Dr. Joseph, is that is 12 inches a lot? I know our colon is very long, so is 12 inches a lot, or is that a small section?
Probably about a fifth. Colon is about 5 feet long. So, I mean, that's a pretty good section, to have taken out. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
was right in the sigmoid area. I was it to be. My tumor was found in the sigmoid area of the colon.
And Dr. Joseph, what is that area, the sigmoid area?
So that would be on your left side. Your colon, so it connects to your small intestine. So all you eat goes through your stomach, goes through your small intestine, gets dumped out into your colon, goes up the right side, across the top, down the left side. So down the left side is the sigmoid colon.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
I was really close to the rectum is what I was told.
Now, Dr. Joseph, what can we do to not get colon cancer? What are things like eating or medicines or what can we do to prevent as best as we can colorectal cancer?
Right, so I mean, there's certainly been studies that shown exercising regularly, eating a healthy diet, so avoiding smoked and, you know, blackened meats, things that have been charred and barbecued a little too, you know, zealously, you might want to avoid, trying to avoid the typical American diet, you know, all the things we love to eat and shouldn't, you know, fatty foods, fast food, processed things, you know, eat lots of fruits and vegetables, high fiber, drink lots of water, all those things we should definitely partake of.
Now, I was reading something about aspirin. Is that something that would help or prevent low dose of aspirin?
Yeah, so they have looked at low-dose aspirin. It can decrease your risk. Part of the problem is aspirin is, you know, we like to think of it as totally benign. It's not completely benign. So because it can cause, it has other side effects, you know, it can ulcers and bleeding and things of that nature. They don't recommend it wholesale for people to take across the board to prevent colorectal cancer. There may be specific circumstances in which it's warranted, but it's not something they just recommend for the entire population to start taking aspirin.
Okay. Now, Angela, so you had the you had the surgery. What happened after the surgery? What type of treatment did you have to continue to engage in or take, you know, take medicines and things? If you feel comfortable, you know, answer.
Oh, yeah, I'm an open book about it. So I started my treatment. I was listed as stage 3, and my treatment was the FOLFOX chemotherapy treatment. So I had 12 rounds of chemo in which I started about 40 days after my surgery. I started chemo, and that went from February of 2016 till August 4th, which is my birthday of 2016. So I had 12 rounds of treatment.
And is that an IV? You had to go to the hospital with IV?
Yeah, I had a port put in, and so it was through the IV, and it was a port in my on my right chest area, right above my breast, right breast, and that's where they placed the needle, and that's how I received my treatment. And then I had treatment for there at the clinic at the cancer center, and then I came home for about 2 days of more treatment. So my total treatment lasted like 3 days, and then I went back to the hospital or back to the center to have that removed, and then they gave me a shot to help me with my white blood cell count. That took place 24 hours after that. So I had to help boost my white cell count. I needed that after pretty much after each treatment.
Dr. Joseph, she mentioned something about a port. Could you explain to the audience what that is and the benefits of that in reference to getting her treatment?
Right. So basically it gives access to your veins. So they put it in your chest. There's a large vein that sort of sits underneath your clavicle or your collarbone. So basically advantages, they can put it in, they can leave it in. And they put a cap on it, obviously, since you can't just walk around with it open. So then that allowed her to go back and forth and get her treatment without having to have a new IV put in every single time. It also allows you sometimes to get your treatment at home. Like, so my father actually has stage 4 colon cancer, so he got a lot of his treatment at home because he had a port. So the nurse just, they did their thing, then she left. That's the advantage. And sometimes they'll leave it in for quite a while, even after you're done with treatment, just to be sure that they don't need it again. Yeah. And then at some point they'll take it out.
And she mentioned about this white blood cell injection. Is that a usual normal thing, or are there a variety of things that people could get after they get their chemo?
Yeah, so pretty much all chemotherapy is what we call immunosuppressive. So your immune system consists of your white blood cells. It also basically can sometimes just suppress your bone marrow altogether, so that your red blood cells, your white blood cells, everything. So they give you this medication to sort of give your bone marrow a kind of like a kick, so it keeps making white blood cells, because you don't want you to get an infection, obviously, while you're on chemotherapy. So that's always one of the sort of the big fears, is that if your white blood cell count is really low, you get infected with something and then you can't fight it off because you don't have any white blood cells. So that's why they give that medication.
Now, Angela, what were some of the problems that you had going through chemo and then after chemo, what kind of lifestyle changes did you make?
I would say my biggest problem that I was having was, you know, adjusting to or basically forcing myself to eat because my appetite was a little tricky. Sometimes mm-hmm. I felt like eating, sometimes I didn't. And so that, and then what I wanted. And so I, for some reason, had a craving for watermelon. And it was this time of the year that I was going through my treatment. So from from February to August. So that's not watermelon season, but that's what I wanted, and that's what mm-hmm. I got. So so my biggest problem was around eating and just trying to make sure that I, you know, not that I couldn't get food, but just that I wanted, kept food in my body, right? And that I didn't.
Yeah.
So my mom's with me, and so she made sure that happened. But during that time, too, it was just about my lifestyle. Like, I literally had to put my life on pause pretty much. I tried to continue to stay active as much as I could and tried to work and do those things. But I didn't feel beautiful. I lost all my hair. I felt like I was a big walking blob of disease, cancer, you know, that I was contagious. You know, it was all my self-talk, headspace, what backed up with just negative things around my appearance and just how I was with my, just my spirit wasn't where it used to be. So even after treatment for me, it took a while because I went and talked to a therapist to talk about why was I depressed. I was, you know, finished with my treatment. Why was I feeling that way? And so he helped me realize all the things that was happening, and I had to give myself permission to be okay. Like let myself realize that I had to accept the fact that I went through it. Because I still was having a hard time accepting that I was going through that and had gone through it. But that I did it, and then I made it, and I had to, you know, really work hard on my affirmations every day. And then also telling myself, this is not going to happen to me again. It's not going to happen to me again. So the mental wellness for me has been the biggest thing after my journey of the treatment. It's been now this battle of been mentally strong and been mentally well around being a cancer survivor.
Dr. Joseph, is that kind of a normal conversation you have or have heard that patients have after they've been quote-unquote cured? They have these types of feelings?
Sure, yeah. I think that's not at all unexpected. And I think whatever your experience is as a cancer survivor is yours. And whatever it is that's normal for you, as like I don't think you can put any boxes or categories on people when they're going through things like this. So whatever their feelings are, then you know our job as providers and as friends, as family, is just to validate those feelings and provide whatever support we can. I mean, some people like to just go out there and just do everything and pretend act as if nothing is going on, and other people, you know, engage more fully with their feelings, but however they respond, it's fine. So it's not our job to sort of tell them whether it's right or wrong, but just to provide support.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the colorectal Sorry, what'd you say?
No, I was saying I wish more doctors were like that. And my oncologist was like that, but his nurse practitioner was not as understanding.
What was the issue with the nurse practitioner? I mean, what were they saying? You shouldn't feel that way, or you're going too slow?
She was like, whenever I shared with her that I was, you know, depressed and didn't quite understand why, and you know that I was finished, and she was like, you should just look at it like you just had a cold, and now the cold is gone. And I was this is a little different than a cold. And it was just, and she was just like, you'll be all right, and just walked out of the room.
So dismissive of your feelings about the situation, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Joseph, could you tell us a little bit more about this colorectal cancer control program and what you do there at the CDC?
Right. So CDC funds 35 recipients. Some are state health departments. Some are federally qualified health centers. Some are universities. And we ask them to work with primary care clinics, predominantly federally qualified health centers that serve, underserved populations that do not have health insurance at all or are low income or have higher rates of colorectal cancer and other chronic diseases, and basically go in there and work with them to implement evidence-based interventions to increase colorectal cancer screening amongst the population that they serve. So that's pretty much the crux of the matter. So, yeah.
How would an agency apply, or you choose places? I mean, can an agency apply to your program to get funding?
Yeah, so there are funding announcements that go out on grants.gov. That's the, U.S. Website that has all the funding announcements that come from all across the federal government. So you have to keep your eyeballs peeled for when the next funding announcement. We just funded our current cycle of grantees starting in 2020, so that will go through 2025 until that cycle ends. So
that's the next time people would probably see something, 2025.
Right. Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you better put it on tickler on your calendar if you're an agency or somebody that works with an agency in the community, that when your 2025 comes, probably 2024, you start, going to the grants.gov website to look for an opportunity to participate. And how long have you worked there with the CDC at the control program?
Oh, boy. I've been at CDC since 2005, and I have been medical director of this program since 2009. So it's been a little while. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, Angela, how did you connect with the Cancer Control Alliance, Colorectal Cancer Alliance, sorry?
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, I Googled it doing my research around colorectal cancer.
Okay, there you go.
And then, I actually went to an event, a gala, which I had met this young lady our stories were similar. And we both have a common friend who introduced us and said that you two need to know each other. And so she actually put on a gala, and the proceeds were to go to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance. Went there and met Angie. Then I was like, yo, I really want to get involved and try to get more minorities aware of, just to share that, screenings and the tests are not as bad as, what people, how they say they are. I was like, if you're looking for some good sleep, this is great sleep. But anyway, she started connecting me with more people in the alliance, and I just been connected and trying to do more and really get the word out about getting a colonoscopy, and definitely at a young age. Even though I know they dropped it down to 45, I'm just like, yo, see if you can get it at 40. Because I was 43, and I still would have missed it. And my doctor tried not. He said, I don't think your insurance will pay for it. So, yeah. So I had to convince him that I was high risk because of my family. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you guys, this has really been a very informative conversation. I want to encourage people to get their screenings. Don't hesitate. Like Dr. Joseph said, if you have any of the symptoms that we discussed, just go. If you have insurance. Now, if you don't have insurance, depending on your income, of course, you can apply for Medicaid. The Colorectal Cancer Alliance, their website address is ccalliance.org. I'm sure they have services there that can help connect you with programs or someplace that you can get a test. Don't wait. And if you're a guy, please, the doctor is not thinking anything sexual about you at all, okay? The doctor is completely looking for a clean colon, the clean colon, that's what they're worried about. Dr. Joseph, can you please reiterate that
that doctors are not worried about anything sexual with the, with, you know, doing it.
Right. Yes. I can assure you that their mind is firmly fixed on your colon and nothing else.
Yes. Okay.
Exactly.
So thank you, guys. Thank you, Dr. Joseph. Thank you, Angela, for coming on the show tonight. I really appreciate you guys taking the time.
Thank
All right,
you.
No
Thanks
problem.
For having me.
All right. You guys have a wonderful evening, okay?
Thank
All right.
You
too.
Nice meeting
thank you.
You.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice
yeah,
to meet
bye.
You.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please, please go get your screenings. Don't hesitate. If you have to convince your doctor, you know, put a pressure on them. They're working for you. You have insurance or you're asking for their service and you're paying for it. They're working for you. So push them on the issue if you really are concerned or you have a family history and somebody's pushing back and saying you don't need the screening. Don't hesitate. As we know, Chadwick Boseman, actor, recently passed away, and he was actually young, under 45, and he got colon cancer. And I understand that he was actually like a vegetarian. So, you know, even if you're eating what quote-unquote is like the best diet, you know, vegetables and things of that nature and no red meat or no meat at all, vegetarian, then it still can impact your life. So please, I encourage you to get it. You can follow me on Twitter at Joy Keys. Also, check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, Saturdays with Joy Keys. You can also email me. I'm SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I'll be doing a show this weekend, Chad Joseph, talking about his book, Black Magic, and also a show about multiple sclerosis. So you want to tune in this Saturday starting at 11 a.m. Eastern, and it'll go till 12 p.m. Eastern. Have a wonderful weekend.
Wonder if you should get tested for colorectal cancer? Well, it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., so if you're 50 or older, it's time. Screening helps find precancerous polyps so they can be removed. Remove the polyp, prevent the cancer. Did you know there's more than one screening test? Talk to your doctor to find the one that's right for you. No more excuses, because colorectal cancer screening really does save lives. A message from HHS and CDC's Screen for Life campaign.